There's a new book out that people should be aware of. It's called Person of Interest, Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible. The author of this book is J. Warner Wallace, who is the founder, really, of what is called Cold Case Christianity. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and J. Warner Wallace, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm just so delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, you have been described as America's foremost cold case detective. What does that mean?
Probably not much of it. Probably all it means is that my work gets on TV once in a while, and I think I've been on Dateline more than anybody else doing this kind of work. So that's probably where that comes from. But there's a lot of great. I always feel uncomfortable saying that anyone is the foremost when it comes to investigations. There are so many great, both detectives and prosecutors doing this work across the country. I'm just one of those people, I guess.
Right. But what do you mean by cold case Christianity?
Well, cold cases are basically just unsolved murders, right? Because there's no statute of limitations on a murder. If you do a robbery or a burglary or any other kind of crime, eventually the statute in your state is going to dictate that thing closes. You can't go after people after a certain number of years. But when it comes to murder, there's a statute that leaves those open. And that means that you can look at those years later. And so they stay open. We've got murders on our cases. We usually run mine have personally run from about 1972 till about maybe early 1990s. So that's the range that I'm typically working in.
Okay, and how does this relate to Jesus Christ?
Well, okay, so look, at a lot of my cases, I've had what I call no-body murders. And the no-body murder is where, you know, a wife kills her husband or a husband kills a wife and then says they had an argument last night and, you know, she ran off and I don't know where she went. And this is just a missing persons report to the first officer. And they take the report and they never take any pictures of the crime scene because they don't think there is a crime scene. And then, you know, weeks go by before it gets investigated. And then by the time I get the case, 30 years later, there's no crime scene, no body's ever been recovered, no evidence ever been booked into property, and I've got to solve a case with an empty crime scene. How do you do that? Well, I typically tell jurors what you do is you investigate that bomb that went off on the day she went missing. That thing had a fuse, and it was burning for a while, more than likely. And then when it exploded, that bomb left debris everywhere. So I'm going to tell you what happened on the day of the explosion by simply recalling and tracing the evidence in the fuse and the fallout. So as a guy who's a skeptic at 35, looking at Jesus for the first time, you know, I would expect there to be a long fuse if Jesus is who he said he was and a significant amount of fallout. And even if you did not read, if somehow they had destroyed every New Testament manuscript, it turns out the person of Jesus is so unparalleled that you can still reconstruct the story of Jesus and his impact by simply retracing the fuse and fallout of history. And that, to me, was significant enough. You would know everything you need to know about Jesus of Nazareth, even if every New Testament was destroyed, simply from the impact he had on human history.
That's interesting. That sounds like a book I wrote with Dr. Kennedy years ago called What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, which is really because Jesus was born, look at all these incredible things. Now, let me ask you this. Would you say that the influence of Christ even has impacted government sometimes, or maybe even the founding of America, since there is a Judeo-Christian heritage in this country?
Well, there's no doubt that it has, right? So you can argue, well, you know, were the founding fathers all the kind of Christians that you might categorize in some fashion today? But one thing we know for sure is that these were all theists within a Christian tradition, if not within a Christian tradition, the vast majority, not all of them, but of course the vast majority. And why does that matter? Because Jesus mattered to history and to even the thinkers at the time of our founding. But even before that, no one has been written about more in literature than Jesus of Nazareth. You can do a search of Google Books today, or you can just do a search like has been done at the Library of Congress. You will find that there is no person historical figure who has been written about more, that includes all of our founding fathers or the founders of any other nation, than Jesus of Nazareth. So it's really hard to make a move in literature, art, music, education, or science without bumping into Jesus and his followers. And so clearly the founders of our nation also had difficulty moving in these areas without bumping into Jesus and his followers. That's why even today, Jesus has this kind of dramatic impact and ought to, even for young people, maybe who haven't been, you know, even told about the impact Jesus has had on culture, on human history.
Just one real quick thing about the founding. Even Ben Franklin, who was not an Orthodox believer in Jesus in the, you know, in the traditional sense of the meaning and so forth, but during the Constitutional Convention, when they were at an impasse about 6 weeks into the whole venture, Ben Franklin got up and gave a very impassioned speech about how, gentlemen, we need to pray. And a variation of his request was adopted, and at least they were able to muddle through and get it done. And that was one of the least religious of the founding fathers, you know, at the Constitutional Convention.
Well, and you know what? When I hear these stories, and I've read them all too, and by the way, your book you're talking about, it was an important book even for me as I was researching and adding content to this book. So just so you know, yes, I was influenced by your work. But I will tell you that even someone like my dad, who to this day is not a believer, he would say, and he'd be happy to go to church with me or with anybody else, because he believes, as an unbeliever, that the Christianity has an important role to play in our culture. In other words, he would much rather live as an atheist in a culture that is influenced by Christianity than in a culture that isn't. Now, he might consider it to be a very useful delusion, and I think that's where he sees it. But he understands that Jesus still matters, and it's not just that he had this huge impact. What we did is we went back into each and every area of cultural impact, and we said, what can be recovered? What can be reconstructed? What are the scientists of history, even today, what have they written about Jesus? And what can we know about Jesus just from the science fathers? What can we know about Jesus just from the history of education? What details of his life, ministry, death, and resurrection can we reconstruct so that if you were 1,000 years downfield from where we are today and you had no New Testament, you might just read about these aspects of human culture and put your trust in Jesus, even though you had access to the people who talk so fervently about Jesus. And that's the impact he's had, on the kind of impact you would expect, by the way, if he is who he said he was.
You know, it's interesting. Just recently, I was preaching a sermon at the local Presbyterian Church in America, Church, you know, where I'm an associate minister, and the text was all about when the Word became flesh, you know, the incarnation of Jesus. And when you study this is all from John's Gospel, and you realize, my goodness, this was a fisherman. John was a fisherman, and he wrote one of the most fantastic pieces of literature ever, the Gospel of John, which begins, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and so forth. But, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. These words are so beautiful, and this came from a fisherman, but it's because of Jesus' influence.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And let's face it, when you talk about Jesus constantly for 30 years, you end up writing something that is powerful and valuable, right? Because you're not the guy who just met Jesus an hour ago. You're the one who saw everything, including the resurrection, and then turned around and connected the dots with people for years and years and years. And then ultimately, I saw your own life change. Other people have been changed. And when you're writing about this person named Jesus now, you're writing from a very different vantage point, right? So what's really fascinating, what you just said, is about why does Jesus come when he comes? That's one of the things we tried to do in the book, is look at the fuses in culture, the fuses in Jewish prophecy, the fuses in the spiritual history of all the other non-Christian groups, and understand why there was this incredible window of opportunity in the first century that opened up for the appearance of Jesus, so that once he gets here, his message has legs. The Roman roads are in place. The postal services are in place. You've got a Etruscan alphabet adopted by the entire known world. You know, you've got this impact machine in place to spread the word about Jesus that wasn't even available several hundred years earlier. You have the Pax Romana, 200-year period of peace in which to do it. So there's just lots of reasons why Jesus comes when he comes. And you're right. How is it that this guy, of all the other people in the first century, how is it that this small sage in some remote part of the Roman Empire, who was born in a nowhere town, raised in another nowhere town, never traveled more than a couple hundred miles from where he was born, only had 3 years of public ministry, was hated by the religious and hunted by the powerful, who didn't even have his own friends, his own followers, either denied him or betrayed him at some point, didn't have a family, never led a nation, never ruled an army, never wrote a sonnet, never wrote a book, never had an education like some of the other people in his culture did, never had a family to extend his legacy. He's brutally beaten, humiliated, then has to borrow a grave Okay, this is the dude. In the last chapter, I have a list of all the other significant historical figures in the first century. How is it none of them together had the impact of this guy?
And one of those,
it makes no sense unless, of course, he is who he said he is.
Yeah, and one of those, by the way, would be Caesar Augustus. I mean, we even have a month named in honor of him, August, and then July is Julius, you know, his uncle. What does the phrase "person of interest" mean?
Well, in our work, you know, in this kind of investigative work, and it's not something that I used when I first started. And really, I would, if I've got a potential suspect, I'm just going to tell you it's a potential suspect. But a lot of people will identify either potential suspects or key witnesses or maybe key players in an act, in a crime as persons of interest. And a lot of that is just to, like, I think this is probably our guy, but I don't want to tell you that because what if I'm wrong? You know, so I will just say he's a person of interest. Now, my policy, to be honest with you, has always been I'm not going to talk to you at all until this thing is filed and he is on his way to court, because I'm not going to mess up my investigation by leaking anything out early. But you will see that sometimes people will use that expression to kind of cloak, like, he's definitely in our radar, he's kind of in our you know, our crosshairs, but he may not be the guy we end up filing the case on. So what I'm using it here with Jesus to suggest that of all the persons in the history of persons, no one should be of more interest to you than Jesus of Nazareth, because it turns out that everything I loved as an atheist, art, music, literature, education, science, is as it is today because of Jesus and his followers. So even if you thought, well, I'm not really interested in religion, I'm not interested in God, or you're interested in those things, I bet. Well, it turns out if you want to know where those things came from, the way you're experiencing them today, you should probably look into this guy named Jesus.
Wow. Okay, now clarify exactly what you mean by this phrase or the word fuse. What, help us to understand that concept.
So, you know, when you have an explosive event like a murder, there's usually that bomb before it went off that has a fuse that burns up to the explosion. And that fuse in a criminal trial is sometimes, well, the growing animosity between the suspect and the victim. It can be that he's preparing by buying the weapon he needs to use, or preparing by getting the materials he's going to need to dispose of the body. In other words, he's acting with more and more urgency as the fuse of time is burning up to the point of the actual bad event. So that's the fuse that we're going to examine. And when you examine that history that is moving toward the first century, you'll see there are several kinds of fuses that are burning that are actually making an opportunity occur. And I call this a red zone of opportunity, because let's face it, every murder, there's a guy who's out there getting ready to do the murder, and there are certain preconditions that have to be in place first. Got to have the weapon, got to have the disposal means. And then there are deadlines I'm working against. So there's a window in which I need to wait until I have this stuff in place, but act before that happens, this event. Maybe the victim is going to be leaving town. So now I've got a deadline I got to work against. So there's a window based on who I am as the suspect and who the victim is. That, and if that person ends up dead in that window, I kind of know where to look for my suspect, because every window is suspect dependent. So I'm always looking at – now, same thing happens in history for Jesus. There's a window that opens up. The prophets tell us, Daniel 9 tells us that window of when the Messiah should arrive. But there's also a Pax Romana, and the roads need to be in place, and there needs to be the Etruscan alphabet and papyrus being used, and we've got postal services. The Silk Road's been connected to all the other roads. It's good to go. There's a window that is in place, and then there's a spiritual window. If you wanted to come when all those ancient people groups are worshiping mythologies and they all share certain common expectations that are going to be personified best in the person of Jesus, well, then you have to act in that time when all of those ancient groups are still worshiping their gods. That's even a window of opportunity. All three of those, when they overlap, believe it or not, and I show this – now, this is a very heavily illustrated book. There's over 400 illustrations in the book, because I knew it's very visual. So if you look at those red zone opportunity overlaps, you will see that it's really between 29 BC and 70 AD, there's the perfect opportunity for something explosive to happen. And Jesus just happens to show up right in the middle of that 100-year period.
In the fullness of time. Okay, what is your website for this book?
Personofinterestbook.com.
Super. Jay Warner Wallace, thank you so much. All the best. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Jerry.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now.